Hello, and welcome back to season two of It's a Dark Matter Thing. I'm Taylor.
And I'm Caitlin.
And we are so excited to get started. Oh, I'm singing already.
Has not left.
No, it has not. So we have some very exciting topics that we're going to be talking about this season. And today we will be talking about what is, and drum roll, an Earth-like exoplanet. Woo! So Earth-like exoplanet, when you hear that, you're like, okay, some people might be like, Earth-like, so it's going to be exactly like Earth. Other people be like, what is an exoplanet? Well.
Oh, well.
Let us tell you.
So an exoplanet is basically just a planet that's not in our solar system. Pretty
crazy.
Yeah.
Never thought that there would be planets out there like that.
No.
Only 100 years ago they didn't. So, you know, it's pretty crazy to think that we've found over 4,000 of them in the past 20 years. It's pretty crazy. Yeah. Like, whoa. But even more exciting, Earth-like exoplanets. And what astronomers mean when they say an Earth-like exoplanet, they are actually talking about planets in the habitable zone. Bum, bum, bum. So the habitable zone is this beautiful, and also called the Goldilocks zone. We've talked about it before in a few of our episodes. Yes. And it's that perfect point from a star where a planet can lie, where it's not too hot for water to evaporate and not too cold for it to freeze. When a planet transits across a star in our view, it actually dims the brightness of a star by a little bit. And through that, we can do a lot of maths and a lot of detecting and determine a lot about that planet going around that star. But unfortunately, obviously, the bigger the planet, the easier it is going to detect. And for Earth-like planets and Earth, we ain't that big.
No, we're tiny.
Very small. Yeah, so one of the planets that they have found is very hot Jupiter planets, they call them. And it's basically a gaseous planet like Jupiter, but very close to its star that is very, very hot and orbiting very quickly. And the reason why we've found so many of them is because of that bias. So pre-warning everyone, I am recovering from COVID and Caitlin might have it.
We're all sure. My brain's
we're a little bit hazy.
Okay. So when we look at Earth-like planets, one of the main ones that we look at is Kepler-452b, and it's also known as Earth 2.0 or Earth's cousin. And that's because it's very similar to Earth, but it's just a lot bigger. So like Taylor was saying, it needs to be bigger so we can see that transiting around its star and actually know that it's there.
But yeah, so I think it's like nearly twice the size, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really big compared to us, but it's very similar. So Kepler-452 is around 1,800 light years away. So it's quite a long way away from us. But we've still looked at it and can identify some really key things that make it similar to Earth. So its orbit takes around 385 Earth days. So to complete one rotation, it takes 385 days. And when we look at it, Earth only takes 365 days. So it's only 20 days off our orbit. It's also in the habitable zone. So that means there's liquid water can be found on it. And it's just the right distance away from its sun that the temperature on Kepler-452b is actually really to the temperatures that we experience here on Earth. So some of the main things that make it really similar. And it's really interesting that another planet like Earth exists and has all these things that make it really similar to Earth, but is so extremely big.
Yeah, because so that's really interesting in the sense that they've found a lot of exoplanets in the habitable zone around dwarf stars instead of sun-like stars because of that size ratio.
Yeah.
But I also read somewhere that it's concerning in the sense when you're looking for a planet that can sustain life and water, that to be in the habitable zone of a dwarf star, the planet also has to be closer. And yeah, a few astronomers think that wouldn't be able to sustain life because of solar flares and that constant impact of radiation overwhelming the planet. So even though it's technically at the right distance to have water, it might not necessarily sustain life. So it's very interesting in that sense.
Yeah, that's what makes Kepler 452b so unique, is because it is at that right distance away from its sun.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I also read one, Kepler 22b. Have you heard of that one?
No.
So a planet, exoplanet that's also been found, Kepler 22b, is very interesting because it is only just slightly larger than Earth and has a orbit of 290 days, so a little bit less. Yeah, and it is around a star like our sun. And from the research I've gathered about this one is that they're not 100% sure what composition, like a lot of exoplanets, they're not too sure about the composition until good old James Webb goes out there and starts looking at them. But as a surface temperature of
Celsius.
So a very nice temperature for life. I don't know about you, but when it's 22 degrees here on Earth, I'm loving life.
Yes.
which is amazing. But not only that, it's only 600 light years away. So we'll be able to detect some really cool stuff about it.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Yeah. So yeah, especially so when we're looking at these Earth-like planets, and to imagine a world bigger than Earth, you can think about gravity and how much that will affect the life forms as well. So obviously, the more gravity, the harder it is for different species to be able to fly. I know I've heard Elon Musk in a few interviews say if Earth was even just the most little bit bigger, we wouldn't be able to fly ships into space because the gravity would be pulling us in too much, and that a smaller Earth would be more ideal for exploring into space. So for intelligent life forms, if they were to form on a planet that is a lot larger than Earth, the chances of them being able to get off that planet would get slimmer and slimmer.
Yeah. And also, a planet that was smaller than Earth would probably have a lot more species that would be able to fly because of their less gravity.
Yeah, and the way they've evolved, which is really crazy to think about when you try and think about Earth-like planets that aren't like Earth. your mind starts going a bit wild about the different things, you know, that would really manipulate how those species do evolve over time. Yeah. And maybe is that one of the reasons why we haven't seen alien life, is because, you know, it's easier for life to evolve on bigger planets but harder for them to leave that planet.
Yeah.
And you know, as well as that, when they say we've liquid water and being in the habitable zone, water was brought to Earth by comets. So you've also relying on the fact that these planets have had water brought to them, because in the early formation of the star, all that gas gets pushed away that makes up those comets and that water.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's one of the key reasons why I guess we look for Earth-like exoplanets, is to look for life, because we know that where we are on Earth, it can sustain life here. So why can't it be the same for other planets that are in the same sort of space where we are in our solar system? And it with the same, like, similar temperatures and things like that.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, it'd be interesting because we have seen life on Earth survive in some pretty strange places. And I was reading before, instead of photosynthesis, a lot of scientists are interested in chemical synthesis. Mm. So a planet that has large chemical activity, and if life could get energy from that more so than sunlight. And would it need to be in the habitable zone? Are there exoplanets out there that we've found that could already sustain so much life? Because, you know, I think in a couple episodes before, we talked about how they've discovered planets with a completely different minerals. Discovered planets and with completely different minerals on it than we see here on Earth, which I was so excited about because I was like, oh my god, imagine a space crystal. That's so cool.
Yeah, and also life on Earth has, you know, survived in some really crazy conditions. I was watching some YouTube documentary on life on Earth after the asteroid hit that killed all the dinosaurs, and it said there was like a period of just like a year of acid rain, but, you know, plants and things were still surviving on Earth.
Yeah, that's, oh, could you imagine that? A year of acid rain? No, thank you. Yeah, well, that's like that totally off topic, but that volcano eruption in Tonga.
Yeah.
And they all had to hide inside because of the sulfur rain. And I'm like, oh god, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, well, the whole no, thank year you. Of that and everywhere on Earth like that.
Everywhere god. On Earth. Oh no.
And but you. Yet, you know, plants and species have survived through that, obviously, because we're here.
Yeah. And we're talking about on Earth like surviving that. Could you imagine life that has thrived off that?
Yeah.
It'd be so interesting to imagine what it looks like. And, you know, that's why everyone's so excited about the James Webb telescope, because it's going to be able to see some of these compositions of these exoplanets, you know.
Yeah.
If they've got an atmosphere, if they're rocky, and it's quite hard to detect those things at the moment. So the term of Earth-like planet, I think, is going to be changing very rapidly. Over time, it's not just going to be those planets we find in the habitable zones. It's going to be planets that are rocky and have an atmosphere and have oxygen. You know, it's going to be so cool.
Yeah. Definitely. And it could also even change our meaning of how is life sustained on a planet, because, you know, we might find a planet that's perfect, like has all the perfect conditions, that is just like Earth, but there's no life on it. So that would complete the whole thought process of how life can survive somewhere else.
Oh, it's such an interesting topic. It's such a, because I was just sitting here the other day and I was like, what's a good topic to talk about? What's something that's been like really interesting me? And the thought of an Earth-like planet. And I went, you know, what actually is the definition and how much do we know? And it's really, really not that much at the moment. But we found over 4,000 exoplanets already, and I think NASA has definitely already got a handful that they're very interested in.
Yeah.
Very, very interested in. And it's just going to be a very exciting time in the next few years, especially for us being at a uni that literally studies purely exoplanets.
Yeah. It's really exciting.
It really is
for us, and I think that is the, like, exciting thing about astronomy is that we don't know a whole lot about these things, and there's so much more to learn, and there's so many more questions that we have that we want answers for.
Learning, isn't it great? You know, I've had people say to me though that they've gone to uni and they're doing a degree, and they're finding that they've just really hit almost a brick wall with what they're learning. And I said, I can't really relate to that because in astronomy, you're always learning. There's just, you're never going to hit that brick wall.
No, it's like every day there's something new. There's a new theory. There's a new discovery. There's always, always something new.
Yeah, so it's really cool. Oh, love it. Love it. Okay, shall we start looking, talking about our weekly discoveries?
Yes.
Oh. COVID. Anyway. Yeah. So my discovery this week is about a moon in our solar system. And anyone that knows me knows I'm obsessed with moons in our solar system. There's over 200 of them, by the way, if you didn't know this. There's over 200 moons in our solar system. And that is amazing to me because we have one. We have one moon. And it literally can...
So lame. Why did we only get one?
Earth is just lame, even though our moon literally is the... Oh, that's something actually that sort of relates back to talking to before. A lot of where we get our life from is the tides from our moon.
Yeah.
So do you need a moon to have life?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah. So these exoplanets... We got to start detecting some exomoons because that could be the key. If we find an Earth-like exoplanet that is rocky in the habitable zone and has a moon, then let's send the first starship we get out there. We have found some aliens. Anyway, so my discovery this week is on one of Saturn's moons, Mimas. I don't know if that's exactly how you say it, but I'm just going to, that's how I pronounce it, Mimas. And it's also known as the Death Star moon because it looks like the Death Star. It's got the, it's got a massive crater on the side of it.
Oh.
And for a long, long time, well, before I start talking about why this moon is interesting, I shall give everyone some facts on it. So it orbits quite close to Saturn, a bit closer than Enceladus, and Mimas is 396 kilometers in diameter, so still quite small, you know, when you think about it. That's like from here to like New South Wales somewhere, you know. It's really not that far, not that big. But the interesting thing about it is that scientists for a very long time thought that this Mimas moon was just completely frozen, boring old, fully solid rock, like, sorry, solid ice moon. Nothing interesting about it. But a probe has picked up that this moon wobbles.
Oh.
And they're like, hang on a second. Why is this moon wobbling? It means that there's something going on inside of it. And because it's got such a close orbit to Saturn, they've actually declared that this is another moon in our solar system that has an ocean underneath its surface.
Oh.
Yeah. Which now gives us another moon to look for life.
Yeah.
Because we, as we know, there's life at the bottom of our oceans where there's no sunlight. So it's very possible that there could be life on this moon as well. And I thought that was really, really interesting because I love learning new stuff about our moons. And just when you think that, oh, that's a boring old icy moon, you know, who cares about that Mimas moon? Well, it's turned around. It's like, actually, no, I'm really interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It is.
Well, my weekly discovery takes place on Earth. And it's about monkeys. So.
Love monkeys.
There's this group of monkeys that live in Japan. And they're in a reserve. And for the first time in this special breed of monkeys history, a female monkey has actually become the leader of this group. So she apparently led a very violent coup to become the first leader of this tribe of
get out of town, a feminist monkey.
Yes.
That is amazing.
Yes.
So yes, girl, get it.
She led this, I don't know, she defeated all the others. So typically when monkeys are, you know, fighting for who's going to be the leader of the tribe. Or I mean, what do you even call a group of monkeys? I'm calling them a tribe because that's,
yeah, I'd call them a tribe because yeah. they're very intelligent, you know. That's yeah.
And so it's typically between the males of the monkeys, and there's usually, like, you know, a couple of the biggest, strongest ones, and they all fight each other, and one of them becomes the leader. But no, this female monkey has become the leader of her tribe of 677 monkeys.
677 monkeys? Yes. What kind of monkeys are they?
I don't know how to say it. It's like, where is it? Maku? I don't know. MACAQUE. How would you say that? Macaku?
Yeah, so like, wow, that is so cool.
But the very sad thing about this is,
oh god, so
she's 9, this monkey.
Yeah.
However, it's coming up to mating season. So the mating season lasts from about November to March. So she's been the leader for about a year. But there's one specific monkey who is trying to win her over and, you know, get with her. But she's standing strong. She's holding her ground.
That's good.
You know, trying to fight off these other monkeys who, you know, want to mate with her, I guess. But yeah, so the scientists who have been studying this specific type of monkey think that her reign could be coming to an end if this monkey who's trying to win her love gets to her. Then she
just
might
because she wants some, you know, wants a little bit of a man in her life doesn't mean she's not powerful anymore.
No. So I hope she continues her reign. I'll look back into this at the end of their mating season. When did it say March?
I want updates on this.
We'll have an update on whether, what's her name? Yakai. I hope I say that right. Yakai is the monkey, the queen. Currently, they're calling her the monkey queen.
The monkey queen. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so we'll have an update on whether she continued her reign or if she got overthrown when she became a mother.
Yeah, well, let's hope she passes it on to another female monkey, because females rule.
Another female monkey takes her place, fights off the other monkeys. Yeah. I want to see a video of their violent.
Honestly, I think that is my favorite weekly discovery so far.
I saw that, I was like, oh. But apparently it was, like, very violent, so I want to
know what she did. Yeah. Well, you would think, considering, you know, males always show dominance in the animal kingdom world, unfortunately, for her to show her dominance, even imagine what she had to do.
God, yeah, what a powerful monkey. Yeah. Anyway, yes, that's my weekly discovery.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so I guess we can talk a little bit about what we're going to be doing this season. So we're going to hopefully get a few people on to have a chat with everyone as well. A few people from USQ, and get them to talk to us about their studies, which will be exciting.
We've also changed our publishing time from 7:30 to... So yeah, it will be around 5 o'clock. On Monday afternoons now, just because we're about to go back to uni, and obviously our lives become a lot more hectic around that.
It's I have literally dropped a class for this semester because it's too full on. but it should be interesting. Keen to get back to it though.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like I've done nothing.
Yeah, honestly.
Yes, so just be aware that we have changed our time from Monday mornings to now Monday afternoons.
Yeah, no, and like I said, we're so grateful. We've had a couple people just messaging us saying that they've found our podcasts and that they're so excited to keep listening and that they're loving what we're doing, and we appreciate it so much. It is just amazing to think you guys actually... No, of course you want to listen to us. I was going to say, I can't believe you want to listen to us, but I know you do. I know. But no, it's been like, we enjoy ourselves doing
if
it.
If you can't tell.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, our brains are being a bit muffled today, but we're getting there.
I mean, we've been away for a while. We had a nice break.
We had a nice break. Yeah.
Honestly, Taylor got COVID.
I got COVID. I've been very sick. Gave me a migraine. It was not nice. But no. So anyway, I think that sums up our first episode of season 2. And thank you.
Thank you all for listening if you got this far.
And like usual, bye.